Hey A1 fans, Andy here. We're going to Cisco Live and we can't wait to see you there. If we see you wearing an A1 or Cables to Cloud shirt at Cisco Live, we'll enter you in our giveaway that includes a bunch of cool prizes like an A1 branded Yeti cup and an OCG of your choice from our friends at Cisco Press. Don't have a shirt? No problem. Head to the link in our bio and grab yours today. See you soon.
This is the Art of Network Engineering podcast. In this podcast, we'll explore tools, technologies, and talented people. We aim to bring you information to expand your skill sets and toolbox and share the stories of fellow network engineers. Welcome to the Art of Network Engineering. I am AJ Murray at No Blinky Blinky. Got another exciting episode planned for you all this evening, so I'm super excited to jump in. But first, Dan, the mountain man. How you doing?
Howdy. How's it going?
I called Dan the mountain man because I was on a video chat with him this past week, and he has a gigantic beard.
It's getting there.
It's like the kind you think a bird's going to fly out of.
I think there is a bird in there.
Wouldn't you know that by now? Or like a...
Yeah. I don't know.
We're still hunting for your Twitter name. Not So Stubby Dan.
Not So Stubby. Oh my God. Well, I guess I have to go with it then.
I'm gonna redo the Twitter poll because a lot of great suggestions came up in the comments of that tweet. And so I'm just gonna have to redo it because I wanna make sure they all get voted on. But quite a number of people spoke up and said that Not So Stubby Dan might have to be it.
I'm good with that. I like it. I think that's do all of them know the Forrest Gump reference then?
They must. I mean.
Yeah.
Anyway, Andy, how's your meat?
It's warm and moist. This took a weird turn. So the reason you're asking me, obviously, is because I was smoking a brisket all day on my smoker, and my meat is good. It is now resting in a cooler, and it will be delicious. It's my first brisket.
I'm sure it'll be just fine. I'm looking forward to hearing how it turned out because we live too far away for me to sample.
I'll send you a piece.
All right, and our guest this evening is Matt. Matt, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right. How about you guys?
Doing well. Matt is a fellow Cisco champion. I hung out with Matt last year at Cisco Live, had a great time, and I'm super excited to have him on the show with us this evening. So let's get right down to it, Matt. What do you do?
Well, I work for a Cisco partner, Avar. I primarily focus on internet and WAN edge, including our new adventure of SD-WAN, with the occasional switch replacement and core campus LAN type of adventure. So other than that, personally, as some of you may know, I have a dog that is kind of an unofficial face of some things, and I play drums and hockey. That's about it.
Gotta love Wolf Aurora.
Well, somebody has to.
And so what flavor of SD-WAN do you focus on? Is it primarily Cisco or is it just SD-WAN?
Yeah, so most of my deployments are primarily the Cisco SD-WAN, so the Viptela acquisition. I have seen and dabbled with a little bit of Silver Peak, and I've touched a little bit of VeloCloud. The market is certainly interesting, no doubt about it.
What's your favorite, if you had to pick one?
Is yes an appropriate answer?
All right.
I think there's places for just about all the vendors.
Yeah.
Really interesting watching some of the acquisitions. Some are more complex, and that complexity gives you quite a bit more flexibility. Some are super simple and make a lot of sense for some small business. So, I don't know that I can pick one that fits the bill for any particular situation, right?
Yeah. You know? I agree. So, obviously, you probably didn't start there. How did you get started?
Well, that's quite the long story. I grew up in a very small town in northern Lower Michigan. Yes, that's a thing. Northern Lower Michigan. It's south of the bridge. They call us trolls. I was not very far from the bridge. some people have called me honorary Canadian, because I'm sure you'll hear it in this podcast. You'll hear me say a boot. But my father grew up around the area and ended up living his entire career in the telephone office. I can specifically remember trips out to go fishing and whatnot, and we'd stop by the office, and you know, there was empty punch down blocks. He'd just give me wire and a punch down tool, and he's like, "Here, go play, kid." So I've always been around the technology standpoint, and that came with early internet access and early computer access. So I mean, I grew up probably like most of us breaking old computers just because we had them around to do it. And from there, I ended up, you know, doing the typical Staples Easy Tech type of job and ended up in healthcare, which was a help desk position, forced me to learn networking just due to the role, and it flew from there. So
nice. So you started out working at Staples at the Easy Desk. Was there anything about that kind of either, you know, drew you more into tech, more into IT? Were there things about that, you know, made you maybe reconsider a career in IT?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of fell into that. You know, I was trying to be the rock star drummer back in the day, and I went to school at my local community college. They had a networking degree as an associate degree, and honestly, it was more Windows networking, so I kind of fell into that Windows troubleshooting side of the house, and that kind of really landed me into Staples. And then I moved 5 hours away from my hometown, and at some point got tired of retail and started looking for jobs, and ended up at a healthcare company that really was the sprout to my career. That broke me into seeing Cisco for the first time. Yeah, it really went from retail, just kind of let's add some RAM to your computer, do a little virus scan, to work in a help desk where ultimately I ended up running the voice, the VMware, and the Cisco environment.
Wow.
In help desk?
Yeah. It was a small little 500 person company, physician owned, and there was two people on the help desk. The network guy got promoted to a manager, so kind of laid off on doing network tickets, and I kept getting called as the help desk. I'm like, send me to a class, let's do it. So that's kind of where I picked up Cisco.
Interesting. That's very different from our help desk.
Yeah, you know, I find that a lot too. Like, help desk at one place means something completely different at another place. So my first job was help desk, but within 3 weeks, you know, getting comfortable with the team, they gave me God rights to the network. I could do anything, anywhere, it didn't matter. And then I work at a different place. I was on the help desk, and I was so restricted as to what I could and could not do. And in the premise of them hiring me on was, you know, they had a team of network, or not just network, but, you know, systems engineers. And their claim was they were getting too bogged down with the help desk stuff to keep up with their project. So they started a help desk. They hired me. But 2/3 of my tickets I had to escalate because I didn't have proper permissions on the network. So it's just really weird how help desk can mean two very vastly different things.
Yeah. And it was interesting for us because it was, again, just a small little 500 person. It was a physician group. So, you know, you had RNs and whatnot and different physicians. I think our entire IT team was 6 people, and that included a manager and a director. So it was quite small. And, you know, ultimately it ended up getting purchased by a rather large healthcare institution around where I live. 3 hospitals, 3 different counties, up to 8,000 employees. And that moved me into a network team position where my main focus was half voice, half network, and that really gave me the drive to keep learning new things and kind of push myself forward.
So did you say while you were in the help desk, that's when you started getting training though?
Yeah. Again, the old network admin was promoted to a manager and kind of started dropping that role a little bit. And I just said, hey, you know, I'm taking the phone calls for both voice and, you know, simple VLAN changes. Let's get me trained on Cisco. And they agreed and sent me to a week long class. And I went and took my CCNA and went from there.
So was that your first training that you got right there in Cisco world?
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And you asked for it. Like, it sounds like you were going after it. They weren't like, hey, Matt, we want to make you the network guy. You said, hey, can I get some training on this?
Right. It was one of those situations where, you know, the network admin was promoted. So he was trying to relieve his role and I was on help desk. So I was continuously taking the tickets about the network to begin with just to log him and send him his way. And he wanted to move his career. And I just said, hey, you know, if we're going to do this, let's do it. And teach it to me, you know, somehow, whether it's you just teach me or send me to a training class. And they agreed. So.
Yeah, but you were the catalyst. Management didn't come to you. I think it's an important point to make. You got to ask.
No, correct. No, I agree with that 100%. I've talked to quite a few people and they always ask how you get started. And my answer is always, even if you're on the help desk, if you got a lunch break, you know, go talk to, if you're interested in networking, go talk to the network admin and say, hey, can you show me a couple things?
And how long are you in that position for, the help desk position?
That was probably 3 to 4 years before the acquisition. And then the hospital system that picked us up kind of put me into basically a level 1 network position. So I was just running around doing cabling, switching VLANs. And it kind of grew from there. They started to learn what I had learned and what I knew and started letting me kind of spread my wings a little bit, if that makes sense.
Did you like it? Were you kind of interested in it when you started to get more into the network? Did it grab your attention? Like, oh, wow, this is better than, you know, installing RAM or helping somebody with a broken laptop. Was it more challenging?
For sure. I mean, more challenging. I don't know. Some of those desktop guys are pretty darn good. I said, I grew up around the phone company. So I know it's kind of a stretch, but the telephony network, as it was on a pair of copper wires, is very, it's not too distant from the networking challenge, right? And as I gained experience at the hospital system with, you know, 3 different counties, 8,000 employees, I liked the challenge. I can specifically remember during college, my instructor asked everybody around the room, he went around, he's like, would you ever want to run, you know, a corporate network? And I remember, you know, little shaky voice back then being like, no, that's a lot of responsibility. And then all of a sudden it happened. And I'm like, no, this is kind of cool, you know? And then, you know, I had the opportunity after that to, thanks to a friend, he put my resume into the VAR I'm working for. They called me and I took that opportunity because I started to enjoy that challenge of new things and things I might not necessarily do day to day.
So you went from healthcare to the VAR?
Correct. Yeah.
Wow. So Staples, healthcare, VAR.
That is the path.
So I'm sure that's not uncommon, but I personally have hopped around to a number of different places throughout my career. So,
yeah, if Aaron was on here, he'd be like, you've been at 25 jobs.
Which is not true. It's not that many.
It's only 24.
So at the VAR versus healthcare, what's the major difference working for a VAR versus working for, you know, just one company?
Trying to keep track of 18 different networks at the same time. I mean, honestly, people have asked me before if it's much different, or asked me how stressful it is working at a hospital. My opinion has always been it's networking. It's layer 2. It's layer 3. You know, hospitals just have more stringent downtime regulations. But at this end of the day, it's spanning tree. It's OSPF. I mean, at the end of the day, it's the same technology. You know, it's I had a coworker at the hospital that one of the first days I worked there after the acquisition, we had a voice router go down due to somebody doing a debug all. Really fun, right? Kind of one of those horror stories, but, you know, I just went down to the MDF at the time, consoled in, started looking at it, and he looked at me, and it's, you know, my first month, and he goes, "Why are you so relaxed?" I went, "Browning. It's a router. There's no reason to stress about it, you know?" And that's been my view. To your question, the biggest difference in the VAR is just managing multiple projects with multiple networks, and everybody uses network 10.
Yeah.
So you'll get asked once in a while by a customer, like, "Oh, don't you remember that server address?" I'm like, "No, no, it's 10 dot something." "Oh yeah, it is." I'm like, "Yeah, so is my house. It's 10 dot something as well." "I don't remember."
Yeah. You don't see too many of the 192s or 172s or anything else. It's all 10, 10 dot this, 10 dot that.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you were a month into a job at a hospital. The building was burning down around you, figuratively, and you were calm.
Well, that's what my coworker said. I like to think I was.
Are you calm by nature? Because that would stress me out. I get spun up when the building's burning and everybody's looking at me. It's something I'm working on, you know. I'd like to be calmer.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Somebody issued a command and it was broke. And, you know, I can get stressed about it. But the fact is, it's broke. It's already broke. I can't make it not broke unless I just sit there and work on it. So
did you walk in knowing what the problem was, or they were all like, "Hey, something awful's happening. Entirely. We don't know
it
what."
More or less, I was doing something on it, and all of a sudden I can't access it anymore, and our PRIs are going down. And I was like, "Oh, okay. Well, yeah. I guess I'm taking a hike half a mile through a tunnel because it was a connected campus, and take the laptop and the console cable." I don't know. I've learned over the years just not to stress about things that you can't control. You know, it's.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always impressed with the calm people who are, you know, just they have a list of things they go through. They know what to check and they're just they're chill about it. I don't know if that comes with experience or if it's maybe personality or both, but
I'd argue a little both. I mean, you know, you run into a bug. You can't predict that. You know, so why stress about the fact that it's down? Just start working on fixing it. You know, you know what should be there. You know how it should work. So just do your thing.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that's some great advice. You know, when stuff starts breaking, when you get into troubleshooting mode, try not to stress out because that'll only cloud the choices and decisions you make as far as like which is the most kind of logical thing to check next or whatever. I had a similar issue when I was working for a small MSP. Was on site and it was a VMware issue and they had one domain controller and their vCenter server and a few other servers go down because one of their VM hosts locked up completely. And, you know, I'm standing there with the IT manager and he's just like, you know, he's got directors calling him like, "What's going on?" You know, this and that. And so it's just like, all right, well, let's take a step through this and figure it out. And we tried to reboot the server, see if we could unlock it or whatever. And it was taking a really, really long time because it was an older Dell server. And so we just went to the data store and pulled the VMs up and started them on a different server and got things going again before the other server was able to finish booting. And then once it did get booted up, we load balanced everything back out. But, you know, just being able to, you know, be calm, think through the process, like what are the different issues? What are my options? If you're not getting the response you want or expect, okay, let's go to the different option. So yeah, keeping a calm head is really cool. I developed that skill, working and volunteering in emergency services over the years. It's really easy to get worked up when you got somebody, you know, upset, for lack of any other term. But if you remain calm, other people around you also tend to remain calm too.
You know, it's funny you bring that up. I actually had, I'm not a voice guy, but I know enough to be dangerous. And I had a project where I was replacing, upgrading routers to new hardware, and they were also upgrading, some people are going to cringe at this, ATAs. and I know enough about them that it didn't make sense for us to put both myself and our voice engineer in the truck and you know, go drive it. So I was like, I know enough. Let's install them. And I ran into an issue with one that would not upgrade. For the life of it, it would not upgrade. And I had the customer literally, I'd go up to him and be like, okay, I'm still working on it. Here's what I'm coming up. And she goes, oh, well, that's okay. I mean, you seem like you're comfortable with what you're working on. So I'm not really worried about it. And that actually hit me pretty good. I'm like, okay. So I'm comfortable with what's going on and can relay the fact that, yes, there's an issue, but I'm working on it. I know the resources to get in touch with to fix it. And that calmed them down, and they never stressed about it. They didn't sit over my shoulder or anything. It was one of those, okay, he's working on it. That's why we brought him in. And you stay calm. If you don't stress out, I think to your point, that helps a lot. And that's not just from a VAR perspective. I mean, yeah, you know, treat the term customer as your internal customers at wherever you work, you know, and that was the same thing at the hospital. You know, I'd work in a clinic upgrading a switch or two, and I'd have an issue, and they're just like, okay, yeah, well, we'll just stand by and let us know what's going on. You know, as long as you don't kind of get that shock and freak out a little bit. Most of the time, people will respect you because that's what you're there for.
Yeah, exactly. The second somebody starts to pick up that, like, oh, you're worried, you're scared, you're freaking out, and you're supposed to be the hired expert. You know, if you think things are breaking, then they're going to be really worried about the decisions they made and, you know, bringing your company in or whatever the case may be. And to your point about customer, I a lot of people say that, like, oh, well, I'm customer facing or I'm not customer facing. Guess what? You're always customer facing, whether you work at an enterprise or even at home. My wife is my customer. My kids are my customers. You know, like you're always dealing with customers. It just depends on, you know, who the customer is. You know, it might not be customers of your business or the business you work for, but they're always your customer.
Yeah. We always joke the biggest change management issue is the house network upgrade, right? The kids start screaming. The wife starts screaming. Yeah. Yeah. You got to schedule that real good.
Yeah. And you can't do nighttime outages because that's like Netflix time, right? So you got to do it even later or early morning change windows at home.
Welcome to the 3 a.m. home data center.
Before we stray too far from it, I want to go back to ATA real quick. For anybody listening that doesn't know what an ATA is, Matt, could you let them know?
Yeah. So you're going to make me stretch my voice terms here. Hey. So an ATA is essentially an analog. It takes an analog phone and ties it into a digital telephony network. I don't recall exactly what ATA stands for, so you're really putting me on the point here. But basically, it lets you take your old analog phone and tie it into a modern VoIP network.
Yep. Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, I couldn't tell you what ATA stands for either, but you hit the money. That's exactly what it does. So I think that's good enough for our listeners. We can fact check and throw that in the show notes as to what exactly ATA stands for. Excellent. I love the point you made earlier about pushing yourself forward. So what are some examples that you could encourage others maybe in a similar position? How did you push yourself forward to make progress in your career?
Well, you know, it's funny you asked that. At the hospital, we had an intern program. And we would take a couple interns from one of the local colleges here in Michigan. And I ended up to the point where there was one intern that would literally walk into my office and ask me if he could just sit there and watch what I'm doing. And I started asking him why. And his purpose was to figure out what he wanted to do and what he would like to do as a career. And he was hesitant to ask questions, and I started just going, ask away, man. I'm here. Let's do it. I'm doing this day to day anyways. If you have a question, I'd love to walk you through it. And I think that's one of the best things you can do to push yourself is if you think you're interested in it, ask the people that do it around you. I think our networking community as a whole is a super, super great community in terms of sharing knowledge. And people ask me about that every once in a while. And I always go, well, yeah, if I can teach you how to do this task, that frees me up to learn how to do the next new task. And then we can keep that cascading, you know, and You know, it's one of those, it's like picking up an instrument, right? It's going to take some work. But if you're having fun doing it, keep at it. You know, there's going to be struggles along the way. Yeah, I'm sure all of us on this podcast here have failed a couple tests here and there, but we all finished them. We kept going, right? It's because you enjoy doing what you do. So I think if you're intrigued by it and having fun with it, just tackle it.
I love
it. It's like anything else. Go for it. What do you have to lose? You know?
Yeah. Take the time. You know, somebody gave you assistance along the way. So now why not, you know, pay that forward, return the favor, you know, as you're climbing the ladder, reach down and help somebody else up. There's a number of different sayings for it, but I think that's really great advice. You know, it's great advice on both sides. If you're the guy in the position doing the work and somebody's asking you questions, take the time. You know, if you don't have it right then and there, tell them that, be cool, but save some time for them later and pull them aside and show them what you were doing. And you know, never want to turn away a curious mind. I think that's like something that you can do that might, you know, damage the name, damage the brand of, you know, what you do in your position and you personally.
No, absolutely. And I think that's probably one of my favorite things about working for a bar is I'm brought in to do something most of the time that they don't know how to do. You know, it's a weird thing. You know, let's take multicast. Most people don't deploy multicast. They inherit a network that already has it deployed. So every once in a while I get to spin it up and they're always curious about it. And I go, okay, well, let's walk through it. You know, you gotta manage the network afterwards. So let me help you know what you're doing. And I don't see that as ever a problem. It helps everybody. You know, I think one of the best things you can do is try and teach somebody else something, you know, because that helps you validate how well you know it. You know, I'm not going to sit here and try and teach you trigonometry because I have no clue. You know, it's just not going to happen.
Right. When you know a topic to the point where you feel like you can explain it to somebody else accurately, then you probably know it a lot better than you think you do.
Right.
And so I think to that point, let's talk about your blog. I love the name too, man. I love that name.
So that name, yeah, I need to blog more. You guys need to get on me about that.
Don't worry. We will.
But,
right. Matt, it's okay. I haven't blogged in 3 years. You're in good company.
But you're making YouTube videos now, Andy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so packetpilot.com. There's a little bit of story behind that.
Excellent.
Growing up, I always wanted to honestly actually be in the Air Force. There was an air base near my hometown, and my dad and I would always go out. They had a little viewing area, and we'd always watch the F-14s and F-15s take off. Naturally, my eyesight requires some correction, so that wasn't going to happen back in the day. And so I always thought the idea of the packet pilot, because really what I do is, with my switching and routing and my WAN edge, I am steering packets. And I just thought packets are in flight, right? So I thought packet pilot kind of sounded cool, so I went with it. But yeah, I mean, I occasionally drop some stuff on there. Typically only when I run into something that irritates me, such as back when the SD-WAN code came out for the ISRs, that was quite the adventure to figure out how to get working. So I posted a couple about that. I think that's my most recent. Ironically, I think my most viewed is how to do structured cabling between a patch panel and a switch. I actually know a couple guys that have shared it with their colleagues before. It's all over the place. I hate to say that, but I just run into things and that it's more or less something so I can remember what I ran into before, but it helps other people. So I would recommend everybody either do a blog or a video log, you know, let's do some YouTube, whatever. Share what you know, because people come across it. You know, I think I remember those of you that are listening that know who she is. I think I remember a tweet that Fish found her own blog how to do something that she forgot how to do at one point.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
It's there. I surely need to write a little more, but
you do. I will say that because your articles are good. When I was doing some SD-WAN stuff last year, we were trying to set up our own lab at work, and I was running into some issues. I did some Googling, happened upon your blog, and I think your article definitely saved the day, and it helped me get me through the issues that I was having. So it's good stuff for sure. Definitely want to check that out.
I mean, that's part of why we do it, right? Is
yeah.
To me, it feels good to hear that somebody found use out of it. You know, it's that sharing knowledge thing again. Help each other out.
Absolutely. I mean, like there's no two problems that are that are solved the same way, right? Like a bunch of people could have the same problem, and you're going to have a bunch of different solutions for it. And so if everybody blogged, everybody wrote articles on their experiences, then we would just have this massive catalog of, you know, how to actually solve issues and not just the crappy error messages we get.
Right. What error message was that again?
Don't you love that when somebody comes at you with a code? Hey, I got code A3142. What does that mean? Oh, I don't know. Let me check that. Let me pull that out of the depths of my brain and tell you off the top of my head.
Right, my thing's broken. Stuff doesn't work.
I love it when I'm doing something and it's like, contact your system administrator. And it's like, crap, I am. I got nowhere to go.
That's me. Oh, no.
Now who do I call? Go to Google you.
Right.
I didn't realize, Matt, you had a blog. And I like that story about how you got the name, too. I wanted to be a pilot. My grandfather was a World War II, you know, guy up in a plane and got me all hyped about it. And I went to sign up for the Air Force and same thing, eyesight. They were like, yo, kid, I'm not going to let you fly a thousand, you know, billion dollar fighter. Get out of here. So that was, it was a short stint. Right? As I got to be a pilot someday. No, you're not.
No, I mean,
it was before LASIK.
It stems from, which Die Hard was it? One or two where they blew up the plane on the runway? I think it was two. That was actually filmed in my hometown, and my hometown was the last resort landing for the space shuttle, because we had runway for the 747, and there was an Air National Guard base up there. So my dad and I would go out there all the time and just watch them take off and land, and it bit into me, you know? It's got back.
Did your dad work at a central office? You said he was in telco and...
Yeah, so once he graduated college, he pretty much started at what was GTE. How many years was he? 37 years in? So he went through the Verizon acquisition and then the Frontier acquisition. So he started climbing poles and then ended up being the senior guy in Michigan doing central office work.
You think his kind of technology career had anything to do with your interest absolutely. Or not?
Like I said, we'd go, you know, get in the car to go fishing, and he'd stop by the office to do something. And I saw, you know, all the telco racks and all the gear and the punch down. And like I said, they had empty punch down panels and wire. And he'd just give me the tools and he's like, hey, I'm going to go work on this. And I'm just sitting there punching wire down because what else am I going to do? And, you know, my first tinkering with technology on my own was an old family computer. He's like, here you go. And I put it in my room and kept breaking it. You keep fixing it and showing me how. So, yeah, absolutely.
That's really cool. My first job in tech was a central office tech for, you know, it was like a summer hire. And I was just amazed, you know, like, whoa, look at all this. And wait, these all go to places and this big switch. And
well, and they did their wiring really good compared to the rest of us these days.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was thinking back to like Taylor's episode where his dad had worked in tech and seemed to kind of be the spark, you know, that Taylor kind of ran with. So it's just, that's why I wanted to ask if your dad's had anything to do with it. It kind of reminded me of Taylor a little bit. And, you know, and I got little kids and I love tech. It's been a great career. It's a lot of fun. And not that I want to push my kids in one direction or another, but, you know, I think it's, I came from a family like carpenters and cops, you know what I mean? So I looked at them and I'm like, okay, but I would hope someday maybe my kids could look at, you know, what I do in my career, and maybe it's something they'd be into. I like hearing that, you know, your dad had maybe a little something to do with pushing you down the path.
Yeah, sure. I mean, the beauty of the technology industry is it's endless. And I'm sure all of us we've migrated our skill set throughout the years. Cause you know, if you have the interest in it, you can pick up a couple books, do a couple labs and learn it. And move on to the next thing. I mean, look at cloud computing, look at, you know, your DevNet from Cisco and all the programmatic networking. Like, if you want to do it, you just learn it and you can migrate to whatever you want. And, you know, that's kind of one of the nice things. If I want to be a route switch engineer today and tomorrow I think security is really cool, I just start picking up security stuff. I think the people in technology have the mindset to keep learning, and that really pushes people to be able to do whatever they want. And it makes it a very flexible career.
That's a good point too, that there is kind of like, well, I don't know what it'd be called, lateral mobility. And, you know, yeah, if you are doing one thing, you're like, you know what, I want to be a cloud guy now. Like, you can do that. I don't know if a medical doctor can, you know, like, all right, I'm an ear, nose, and throat guy. Now I want to work on feet. You know, I don't know if he could just pick up a book and take a certification right. exam and go do that. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah,
in our field.
It's fun. If you want the challenge, it's there and it's yours to grasp, you know?
So you got the CCNA. Well, have you pursued any additional certifications beyond that?
So for me, my story started with, again, I had them send me to training at that healthcare provider, and I got my CCNA, and then I ended up taking over the voice network. So I got my CCNA voice. Shh, nobody on the internet tell anybody I do voice. At that point, we were actually working on virtualizing our servers, and we had a partner come in and help do that. And I said, I'm going to take over that. Went and got my VCP. That has since expired because I just don't touch it anymore. And from there, I kept on the networking train, and I ended up getting CCNP, CCDP, CCNA security, just because that was the stuff I was working on. And then since I've been at the partner, I started focusing a little bit on SD-WAN. So I just recently took the SD-WAN exam for Cisco's CCNP specialist. And to that point, like, you can just kind of bounce around and have some fun. You know, if you want to learn it, go learn it. And that's kind of my focus right now is just renewing a couple certs that I have. Where it goes from there, I can't tell you. You know, I've looked at a little bit of Azure and AWS stuff because I touch that every once in a while, and it makes sense to go study it and learn it. If you're going to do it, study it, learn it, and go pass that exam. I mean, it's not going to hurt you. It gives you a goal and a focus point. So,
did you like CCDP? Did you like the design stuff?
I did. I'm more of a hands-on guy. I like making things yeah. work. So I'm kind of more, you know, touch the keyboard type of dude. But yeah, I mean, the design aspect makes you think different. You know, it's one thing just to say, oh yeah, spanning tree, we'll just do this. But it's a second thing to think about the entire network and how you actually want to put that together. So I think they're both absolutely valuable.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out my specialization after I, you know, pass Encore. I know AJ and Aaron are big design guys. And so I just, my ears perk up when I hear that. I don't know if design sounds easier to me than like advanced routing. You know what I mean? It's not like I want to take the easy route. I mean, I'm a data center guy and I'm taking enterprise, so don't even ask me why I'm doing that. But just because I'm so far down the line, I guess, studying for the old CCMP sure. track. But, you know, I often wondered if design helped kind of, you know, just understand how all the pieces kind of are coming together more. I like to make stuff work, too. But sometimes with the design, like when we have to get something, where I come from, architects basically hand me designs. And I feel a little kind of handicapped with that. Like, I'd like to be able to be a little more involved in, all right, this is the solution. This is how we're going to put it together. I don't really understand sure,
I
design.
Know. I mean, I think it plays well to know both sides of it. I think knowing the technical side helps you design better. And I think knowing the design side helps you do the technical part better. I mean, they kind of go hand in hand, really. Having the overall picture of what you're trying to accomplish in the design can definitely steer what you're going to do in the technical aspect. So I'm game for both, to be honest. I think they're both great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Cool. When I did my CCDA, it was after my CCNA, and the DA went into some of the routing protocols a bit deeper than the NA did. It definitely went into BGP a lot deeper, and there was IS to IS was actually on that exam as well. So it just covered, you know, a little bit of the same, but also a whole lot more. And it was just really interesting to get into that. And you know, not only do you understand like how does it work, but it, you get a little bit of the theory and the background, you know, behind where it came from and all that stuff is just like really interesting, like a little mini history lesson within there.
Sure. I mean, I had in, what was it? Server 2008 R2. I actually got my, MCSA back then. And to be fair, as a network engineer, understanding what Windows was trying to do from a server standpoint helped me work with the network better for those servers. You know, I think if you're interested in it and the knowledge makes sense, do it. It's not going to hurt you to gain more knowledge about, you know, the network as a whole. You know, from a network standpoint, if you want to think about it, it's good to know what voice is trying to do. What video is trying to do, you know, because ultimately it ends up running over the wire that you're controlling.
Just to be familiar with all those different things, you know, Linux, Windows, voice, VMware, you know, don't think for a second that like, oh, well, I want to do this, so I got to go get the certification. No. You don't have to get the certification. I mean, if there's some job requirement asking you to, okay, sure, fine, go for it. But just play with it. Just learn it. Get comfortable with it. I mean, you know, I also work at a VAR, and so I'm in many different customer environments. And one day I'm working on a Windows server, helping a customer do Radius. The next day it's, you know, maybe a Linux environment or working on, you know, Cisco Ice or something like that, which is also like a Linux-based kind of appliance. So having a little bit of all of that different knowledge is great. I don't need to go get certifications and all that stuff. It's just knowing my way around and understanding, you know, how some of that stuff works.
Right. The 30,000 foot view goes a long way.
Absolutely.
And like you said, Matt, asking questions to the right people, you know what I mean? I have a couple guys at work, the firewall guys that I hit up all the time because I can't see the firewalls. They're not in any drawings I have. I can't log into them, but they're in the path, you know, and they sometimes create issues. And, you know, so it's nice. I hit them up a lot and they take time to show me like, oh yeah, here's, you know, here's Panorama and here's Apollo and here's how rules look and zones and like, because I'm curious. I'm really grateful for people that spend the time with me and, you know, hey, you got 30 minutes, you know, can we just kick around and show me what you do? Because it seems kind of silly to be a network guy managing a data center, but there's these devices in my path that I can't see, I can't touch, you know, they're knocking traffic down, right, sometimes creating issues. So it's, I really like.
Yeah. And you know,
I know. My wife calls me the annoying question guy. I like asking, I like to learn and I'm curious and, you know, it annoys her sometimes, but I think it served me well so far in this field.
Well, and to both you and AJ's point, you know, it, yeah, you don't have to go get certified, but the Linux concept nowadays, everything's sitting on top of Linux. You know, there's base knowledge that will be helpful, in my opinion.
Add it to my list. I got to learn Linux now. I learned just enough to get my Avacent terminal server stood up in my home lab a couple of years ago, but I keep hearing more and more how important Linux is. I'm reading Edelman's book on network automation, and he's like, you know, Linux, and everybody keeps telling me Linux, so put it on my list.
You won't regret it. You won't regret it, Andy.
I know. One more thing.
My favorite emails are when people say, hey, did you make a change on the firewall? With no context? Like, no?
No, it's DNS. That's the answer.
It's always DNS.
Yeah. Andy was talking about like, you know, he had firewalls in his path, but he can't see them. So I just love getting those emails.
Yeah. Something breaks. Did you make a change on the network? Reason,
I'm trying to print this Word document and it's not printing. Do you know if you made a change in the firewall?
Sure.
Oh, your printer's USB connected. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Are you trying to print to a remote site?
No.
So Matt, it sounds like you've been certified for a while. So I would love to get your opinion, feedback on what you feel the new changes to the Cisco certification program have done to it.
I think it's interesting. Truthfully, there's been a lot of shift in what's where in the certification program, but I think from, as we were just talking, you know, the overall knowledge of the network, I think the CCNP track, thrown in some wireless, thrown in the SDA, thrown in some of the automation, I think that helps very much push people to be well-rounded. I think that's a really cool idea. And then the specialization exams, that lets you, after you get kind of that well-rounded, you know, kind of viewpoint of the network, to focus on what you want to. You know, personally, I'm not a wireless guy. So looking at the Encore exam, that gives me something new to study. You know, it gives me something to focus on, and that's going to help. You know, it's good to know what that wireless is doing on the network, like SDA. You know, it's coming. It's picking up traction. It's good to know how that's actually going to interact with our networks. So I think the path, the change is good. I think it was a shock to a lot of people. But I think it's going to push people to kind of expand their mind a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. I like that it's got like this touch of choose your own adventure kind of thing. You know, you can customize your plan. Like there's a CCNA for everybody. And then from there you can go security, data center, collab, enterprise. And then even when you get to that level, you can then choose your specialization. You know, before, say the route switch track, you had to do CCNA route switch. Then you had to do, to get the CCNP route switch, you had to do route switch and T-shoot. There was no other options. Like that's what you had to do. But now there's so much more to it. You know, you can take your Encore, you can do automation, you can do SD-WAN, you can do the wireless design, advanced routing. There's just, you know, so many different choices and possibilities. It's kind of can speak to anybody. And then, you know, if you want to specialize in something else, if you want to go data center, you don't have to step back and take a CCNA data center first. You can just go right to the professional level data center core exam and then choose your specialization.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's a good point. You can kind of just get your base knowledge and then pick where you want to go. The backtracking is a true fact. You know, I mean, I remember when I got my original CCNP, I looked at it and it was what, route switch and troubleshoot, right? And then your CCDP was route switch and architect, I think was the exam name. Well, I already passed two of those. So I went and took the architect exam. Well, I couldn't get my CCDP because I didn't have the CCDA. So I actually backtracked and took the exam that should have been taken first to get back so I could actually get my CCDP. It was kind of weird, but you know, to your point, yeah, you just kind of, you get started, you pick your path and you can kind of bounce around and focus on what you want. It's kind of a cool concept.
So I was going to go for the CCDP and I was, you know, last year, but the plan was, you know, CCNA, CCDA, CCNP, CCDP. And I was looking at the prerequisites for the CCDP and I saw that you had to do the CCDA or get your CCIE route switch. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, that's kind of weird, but I know somebody who's also Cisco champion, Kevin Blackburn. He got a CCIE last year, and I, you know, on his LinkedIn, it posted he got his CCIE and his CCDP like almost at the same time. I'm like, are you a maniac? Did you go and take like two exams in the same week? Like, how did that happen? And then, you know, he reminded me that that's how that worked.
Yeah. Well, I have to give Kevin a shout out because in San Diego, I couldn't check into my hotel and he let me, check my bags at his hotel.
Yeah. Nice.
It's a lot better than carrying them around for 4 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Especially in San Diego.
Right.
That's that community, right?
It is. Absolutely.
Gotta love Nerd Summer Camp, man. I missed it this year. I really did. I mean, you know, the virtual Cisco Live experience was fantastic. I enjoyed myself. I had a great time, but I'm looking forward to getting back to Nerd Summer Camp.
Yeah, I miss seeing everybody for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
I've never been to Nerd Summer Camp. Oh, I want to
so
go.
It's so much fun, man. It's so much fun.
Sounds like fun.
You know, I've been to a few of the different industry conferences. I've been to VMworld. I went to Dell Technologies World. Like the first year it was like Dell Technologies where they merged Dell and the other one that they acquired there. EMC. That's right. That's right. When they merged the two. And then, you know, I've been to Cisco Live. I haven't been to Microsoft Ignite, but there's just something about Cisco Live, man. It's just a little bit different than all the rest. I love the social engagement. The social media team at Cisco Live does a fantastic job. And I really think that that makes the event that much better because you could be anywhere on the Cisco Live campus, but if you're following along on Twitter and there's something cool going on, you know, somewhere else, you can go jump in there or, you know, you can go find another activity or people are tweeting about, oh, I'm having a great time, you know, learning something in the DevNet zone. It's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, in the community, I remember my first one in Vegas. I think the only person I really knew fairly well from Twitter was Sylvia. And I was so afraid to go up and talk to her. And it was at the old Tom's Corner. And I just finally walked up and talked. And now it's like, there's people I know every time I show up. You know, I showed up at the conference center in San Diego. And the first thing I hear is that Matt? And somebody comes running up to me. And it's like the coolest group of people. And it's the nicest group of people. Yeah, you can't have a bad time if you go to Cisco Live.
Nope. Impossible.
Hopefully they'll have it next year.
I'm going to cross everything I can.
They're planning for it in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Good old Las Vegas.
That's good. That's good.
So do employers pay for that? Is it like is it just something you pay out of pocket because it's so much fun?
I actually usually pay out of pocket and just do the Explorer Pass because I get so much more out of just talking to people like you guys.
Sure.
What's the Explorer Pass?
You can't do any of the sessions. You can just kind of walk around the world of solutions and just be there. Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
How much is that?
I think it's like $500 or $600 bucks.
Yeah.
That's not that bad.
It's a lot less than the full pass.
Yeah, I mean,
thing is like what, $4,000 or something?
It's like $2,500, I think. It depends on when you get it. Oh. Like the earlier you buy in, there's early bird rates, and they're significant too. They're not chump change. So the earlier you register, the better off you are.
Gotcha. It's worth it, however you can get there. Again, I've had so many great conversations over dinner, just hanging out with people, in technical conversations. I mean, like you said, it's nerd summer camp. Right. We hang out and, you know, you'll talk whatever and find commonalities with other people, but you're still going to talk technology too, because that's all around you. So it's just a really cool experience.
Now, if we get out there next year, there's a couple of things planned. I'm hoping that we can get all of the co-hosts together, and maybe try to do some sort of live recorded show. Cisco Live edition of the podcast, and we'll release that episode later on. And then we definitely have to do a meetup for anybody from the Discord that's also going out to Cisco Live. And if we have any way of doing it, I would love to fund and give away some sort of ticket to Cisco Live, right? Be it an Explorer Pass, or if we can come up with the funds, do like a full pass, so that way somebody who's never been can go enjoy, hit the sessions, meet the people, learn some new stuff. That's definitely on the to-do list for the Discord and the podcast for me anyway.
Very cool.
Man, sounds like a great idea.
Those are awesome goals. Can I be a part of that?
Of course.
Like, can I win?
Oh, I don't know, Dan. I don't know. As a co-host, there might be some rules against that.
I've never been before. I'm joking.
Have they announced where it is next year yet?
Las Vegas. So it's supposed to be Las Vegas this year, and they're keeping it Las Vegas next year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. Gotcha.
And then after that, I think it'll go back to Orlando.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, it's just Las Vegas, Orlando, and San Diego, I think, are the three locations they rotate through.
So you may have touched on this already, but what would you tell, you know, somebody new trying to get in, or somebody working on the CCNA, or somebody who's like, yeah, I really want to get into tech? I mean, I think you touched on a couple of them already, but I mean, like, was it hard to get your first help desk position? Like, you know, it seems like, okay, I want to work in tech. I'm looking back to my own past. Like, yeah, I want to be a network engineer. Once I learned it was a thing, that sounds cool. All right, great. What do I got to do? Somebody said CCNA, but getting that first job is kind of tough, right? So like, was it hard to get help desk? You know, what would you tell somebody who's like, hey, Matt, wow, I heard your podcast. You know, I'd like to do what you guys do. Like, how do I do that? Because most of our guests seem to have different stories of how they did it. And yours, you know, help desk was part of it, which is a commonality in some other guests. But, you know, any advice for the new guy, you know what I mean, or girl, what can they do to break in, get in?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think the biggest thing is, if you want to start studying for networking, I started with Network Plus. I mean, I started with A Plus first, but then I went to Network Plus and get that foundational network knowledge. You know, I I know I hear some people every once in a while kind of bash the CompTIA certs, but I think they're a great foundation. And that can absolutely help you get into that help desk role. And I think the help desk role is a great place to kind of start cutting your teeth. You know, you start to see network issues, application issues. You kind of start to understand how this environment works. And that also gets your foot into the door of, you know, if you're on a help desk, that means you also have a network team somewhere, or a storage team, or a security team, or a data center team. And you can find that passion that you are intrigued by. And you can, my best advice is always ask them to shadow. Shadowing costs nothing when you're in the door, right? You know, I got my lunch break. Okay, let me sit with the network engineer. I'm curious about it. If he or she is willing to sit there and let me ask questions and just kind of show me what they're doing, that kind of starts building that. And again, to my point earlier of, if I can teach you this task, I can learn a new task, and that can cascade. Once you start talking to them, that's kind of what I did, really, is started asking questions and saying, hey, can you show me how to do that? That let them pass that off to me, and I could start building my network career while they were building their career. I think it's again, the community tends to be very good at helping other people learn knowledge that they have. And that kind of lets you just step into it and slowly build up your skill set. And then, you know, a position pops up. Hey, we needed, you know, a entry-level network engineer just to change VLANs. And you can raise your hand and go, okay, I can do that. I know how to do that. I've been shown how to do that. I know the environment. And you can just keep progressing yourself. Outside of the work side, if you're interested in it, the internet has so much great content. You know, if you want to learn it, it's out there. You just got to pick it up. You know, we have so many different labbing tools nowadays, different ways to get your hands on equipment and gear and just virtual images. That you want to learn it, ball's in your court. Pick it up. Go do it.
I was going to ask about labbing next. So did you start out like Packet Tracer, GNS, that kind of stuff when you were studying?
Yeah, so again, I was lucky enough to take a week-long course, so I had some hands-on there, and I was already working in an environment. But for my CCNP, I had purchased physical gear at the time, a little bit of GNS3 here and there. Packet Tracer, back when I took my CCNP, was lacking a few commands. I know it's gotten better. I haven't touched it since, honestly. But yeah, I mean, the means are out there. It's just the will, and if you want to do it.
Did you feel like the physical lab? I'm asking because I get beat up on this, and when I hear somebody get a physical lab, I get excited because I have one too, and I love it because I learned so much on it. You know, did you learn things in a physical lab that you wouldn't have learned in, say, GNS? Or, you know, why did you get a physical lab?
Absolutely. I mean, at the time, I lucked out, and there was an old CCIE that was selling it on a marketplace. So I happen to get it relatively cheap, but there are some things. I mean, I've had some people trying to do something virtually, and they weren't confident of what was happening. And I offered to spin up my physical lab and just run the test again, and we got completely different results. And it happened to do with cabling. And you know, I hate to say it because a lot of things are going fiber now, but there's something about building your own cable and patching it in and realizing you missed a pin and then you got to fix it. And you know, that's, there's physical things and moving cables around, and they're both great. I can't say anything other than that.
Yeah. You still have your physical lab, or did you sell it and virtualize?
Most of it's still sitting in the basement.
Yep. Okay.
It doesn't power on too often, cool, but it's still there. It's kind of got a soft spot in my heart for it. I kind of can't get rid of it for some reason.
Yeah, same.
I think that there's pros and cons to having everything. I don't think it's just physical lab or just virtual lab. You know, everybody starts out with Packet Tracer. That's how you get your feet wet. You get the taste for it. It's like your first drug, right? And I think that if you're doing your studying right and you're labbing right, you will find that Packet Tracer has its limitations. And once you start to see and feel those limitations, that's when you know you're ready to move on to something else, right? When you keep hitting that wall and you get frustrated, it's like, okay, all right, maybe it's time for some actual gear. Or, you know, GNS3 and EVNG are pretty good step up because they don't have some of the limitations that Packet Tracer has. They're a lot closer to the real feel, the real deal. But it too has its limitations compared to working with actual physical gear. So, you know, I have a lab. I added to it this week. I got another router in there. So now I got 4 routers, 4 switches. And I still use GNS3. I still use my physical lab. If I want to do some bigger topologies, I'll fire up GNS3. If I want to test something out real quick, it's a lot easier to fire up a virtual router than it is fire up my stack behind me. But I still play with my stack. I love it. I do a lot of Ansible with it. I'm learning Python and I've been, you know, throwing Python stuff at it lately. So it's a lot of fun, and it both of them definitely have their use cases.
Absolutely. You know, there's some virtualization limitations to certain switching platforms that you just can't do, you know. And I mean, even at the router level, it's there's things, you know, like physically unplugging a cable to see how HSRP is actually going to handle the failover. You know, yeah, okay, you can virtually unplug the cable. Some of them don't do that very well. But if I got a physical router, I unplug that cable, it's gone. And that's real world, right? You know, you don't virtually unplug a cable in the real world. So there's absolutely, to your point, there's really good benefits to both.
I fought BFD for days on a virtual 9K.
I bet.
Days. You can enable the feature. It'll take the config, but it will never neighbor up. And for days, I'm like, what am I doing wrong?
Yeah.
And then somebody on Twitter told me, oh, that's not a supported feature in the V9Ks. I'm like, why the hell can I enable the feature and it takes the config, you know, and then went round and round with that. But yeah, like real gear won't lie. And I can tell you when I interviewed for my first job, the job I have now, they were impressed that I had, you know, I built an enterprise network in my basement with, you know, real gear. I think it pulled a little more weight than like, you know, hey, I did some stuff in Packet Tracer or GNS. Again, not knocking them. I use them too. It is so much easier just to spin up, you know, a quick thing in GNS. But yeah, I love me some physical lab. Sorry, I'm off my physical lab soapbox. Thanks,
Matt. Well, we were having a conversation about this in the jobs channel in the Discord earlier. Like, people were talking about, oh, well, I don't have the experience. Well, have you ever done it in a lab? Well, yeah, I lab EIGRP all the time in lab. Well, does EIGRP work differently on a lab router than it does a production router? Absolutely not, because if you're using, you know, a physical lab router, it was once a production lab router. It's the same code, and it works exactly the same way. So it's still really good experience.
Yeah, you bring up a good point that, you know, people tend to hesitate to apply to jobs because they don't have the experience. Well, you've been studying for your CCNA, CCNP. You have experience. Mention it. You know, it's you don't pass those by reading a book. You kind of got to play with the technology and start to understand how it works. So, yeah, I mean, if you're interested in something, put your resume out there and, you know, you've been studying, you've been playing with it. Do it. You know, it counts.
Absolutely.
I'll speak. I don't know about you, AJ, but from a VAR perspective, there are certain customer scenarios that I will lab up.
Oh, 100%. Still, I have done this that. Day, yeah.
I lab it up and, you know, make sure my logic and thinking is sound. I'm sure you're all familiar with Phil Gervasi. He does that too. He's tweeted about it. Like, do you guys not lab it? I go, yeah, absolutely. You know, there's certain scenarios I want to be sure when I walk into whatever change I'm doing, whatever new hardware I'm putting in, I know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I've definitely done that. And, you know, for me, what I like to do if I'm going to do like a change window or something with the customer, I will try to get as close as I can to their system on either my physical gear or virtual gear. And I step through the process. And that way I have all the commands I need to do in front of me in a Word doc so I can, you know, just copy, paste. Or it's something I present to the customer. Like, this is the process. Here's how this is going to go, mm-hmm. you know, the night of the maintenance. And then, you know, at this point, if we get like a go, no go decision here, you know, we can roll back by doing these commands and so on and so forth. Yep. So just to have the whole process mapped out and to be able to do that on a lab that I have access to, I don't have to schedule it. It's just here. It's a great resource.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that kind of brings me to another point, too, that my college instructor taught me. And I think this is something I see too often with people that are hesitant to get into the career, is being afraid of not knowing how something should be done. And my college instructor, his biggest thing he said at the end of my entire associate's degree was, if you walk away knowing one thing, it's know what you don't know, but know how to find out. And I think that goes a long way, because there's no possible way any of us in this technology field can know everything.
I think that's such great advice for anybody in our kind of position. You know, like, you can't be expected to know it all. But there's resources. There's so many resources. And just, you know, spend some time, free time, reading, Googling, looking at different stuff, bookmark. I have tons and tons and tons of bookmarks. So if I hit an issue, I might not know the answer, but I know, you know, there's somebody I know on Twitter that's an expert in this, or I read a document or a white paper on that. So yeah, absolutely great advice.
Yeah, know what you don't know and know where to find the resource to figure it out.
Just because you don't know it doesn't mean you can't know it.
Exactly.
Everything is figure outable.
Figure outable. I like that. Figure outable.
I think someone has that sign somewhere. I've seen it before.
Sounds like a good bumper sticker. All right, Matt. Well, thank you very much. I've really enjoyed spending this time with you. If people want to learn more about you or follow you, how can they do that?
Yeah. So I'm on Twitter at Matt Ouellette. I'm hoping there's show notes, because my last name is an absolute atrocity to try and spell. Other than that, every once in a while on packetpilot.com, I post a few links. And if you want to dig up my YouTube, there's a few drum covers that I tend to do once in a while. But yeah, that's about it.
We will absolutely drop links to your Twitter, your packetpilot.com blog. And because you mentioned it, I'm going to go dig up those YouTube videos. And we'll throw those all in the show notes.
That's fine. I take constructive criticism very well.
Before we sign off this evening, I do want to give a huge shout out to a couple of people in the Discord channel. They go by the screen names of Mila and Pongu Tracer. They killed their CCNAs this past week. So congratulations to them on passing and obtaining their CCNA. Yay.
All right.
Very nice.
Love it. Congratulations, guys. All right. Thank you so much, everybody. Have a good night, and we'll catch you on the next one. Hey, everyone. This is AJ. If you like what you heard today, then make sure you subscribe to our podcast on your favorite podcatcher. Smash that bell icon to get notified of all of our future episodes. Also, follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We are at Art of Net Eng. That's Art of NETENG. You can also find us on the web at artofnetworkengineering.com, where we post all of our show notes. You can read blog articles from the co-hosts and guests, and also a lot more news and info from the networking world. Thanks for listening.